Justice Parmar started Fortuna Investments in 2015, making early bets on lithium that paid off big. Now, his VC firm is setting sights on a different frontier market.
So we did extremely well in the battery technology space, and we've now turned our attention to the new space economy. We think this new space economy is nothing like we've ever seen before. We think it's a $500 billion industry going to $1 trillion, and it's an amazing time to be alive.
Fortuna recently became an investor in SpaceX and has already backed a startup called Starfighter Space, which is a launch provider touting a fleet of F-104 supersonic aircraft. Fortuna's goal? Invest in roughly a dozen early-stage space companies.
But what we've seen is, in 2024, the valuations of most earlier-stage space companies are at all-time lows, or pretty close to all-time lows. So you have the valuations actually at a very low, depressed price, yet you're now seeing the technology being the furthest it's ever been. So that's an amazing setup for folks like us and new capital to really get involved in an industry like this.
On this episode, Parmar breaks down where he sees the opportunities in the space, why now is the time, and his bullishness on the space company founded by another billionaire that isn't Elon Musk. I'm Morgan Brennan, and this is Manifest Space. Justice Parmar, Fortuna Investment CEO, it's so great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Morgan, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, I want to start at the beginning. Let's talk a little bit about Fortuna, when you started the firm, and your investment thesis for the firm.
Sure. So my background before that was a professional money manager for over a decade. So I understand finance, I understand the capital markets. I started Fortuna Investments, my own firm, in 2015, almost 10 years ago. We kind of made a name for ourselves back in, let's say, 2016, 2017. That's when Elon and Tesla were first, I guess, starting to take off. Tesla was actually, ironically, the biggest shorted stock on the planet. He was only selling 40,000 cars a year. They had a lot of challenges. Nobody thought it was going to be a successful company necessarily. What we at Fortuna Investments did was we believed in the EV transition. We believed in Elon Musk. We believed in, you know, Apple Computers and all the different companies that needed lithium-ion batteries. And so we started to back and found and co-found lithium and battery companies. Ironically, we backed a couple that went to over $1 billion. One still trades on the NASDAQ. And then there was another company that we sold a couple years ago for $460 million to Lithium Americas. And sorry, let me finish off that close the loop. So we did extremely well in the battery technology space, and we've now turned our attention to the new space economy. We think this new space economy is nothing like we've ever seen before. We think it's a $500 billion industry going to $1 trillion, and it's an amazing time to be alive.
So I guess what triggered this shift to the new space industry? Lithium, I think, kind of makes sense, right? Big bet, certainly less than 10 years ago was a big bet, but one that had a near-term realization. Space, maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm. Lithium wasn't as, it's easy to look back in your rearview mirror and be like, oh, that was an obvious bet. But at the time, I mean, there's all sorts of question marks about, you know, how this thing was going to unfold. But I agree with you. In terms of the space industry, it's like, heck, you know, we sit there, we look around. It's like, you've got so many amazing things happening in this industry. And the beautiful thing is, the further you dive down, the further you look, peel the layers of the onion back, there's this unbelievable stuff happening, right? And it's everywhere from the top down. And so you've got, obviously, you know, SpaceX gets a lot of headlines, rightfully so. You know, we're shareholders of SpaceX. It's $180 billion market cap. They're doing $9 billion in revenue, or they did $9 billion last year in revenue. Profitable company. Just, you know, Morgan, just to give you context, and I'm sure you know this, but Walgreens, the grocery store, doesn't even do $9 billion a year worth of revenue, and they're selling cucumbers and diapers. And so, to develop a space company, a commercial space company at that magnitude and scale, that's unbelievable. And obviously, as you know, the clip that a company like, you know, SpaceX is growing, the future is unlimited for a company like that. It's a generational company. We're extremely bullish. Blue Origin this year as well, too. I think, you know, with Jeff Bezos moving down here to Miami, being close to the space company, I think in a certain way he's thinking playtime's over, and he's really going to spend his energy and focus into Blue Origin. I think they're going to have a transformative year. They've got a great CEO in there now. You know, they're going to roll out New Glenn. I think it's going to be a big year for folks like that. But, you know, so look, in any industry, you have to have the top end of the market really start to make waves and headway. And you know, we saw that in the internet, you know, revolution or boom, where you saw Microsoft and Google and some of these front runners at the time really taking market share. And I think we're starting to see that in the space industry. So again, you know, Morgan, to your point, it's not going to happen overnight, nor do we necessarily want it to happen overnight. But the big thing is these things in a structural way are really starting to happen, and it's going to trickle down all the way from the top all the way to the very bottom.
So what does that mean in terms of where you're investing and how you're investing?
So for us, you know, so we like to try and find the companies before they, let's say, hit it big. So what we're doing is, so we've made our first, you know, initial significant financial commitment to a company called Starfighters Aerospace, for example. They're also at the John F. Kennedy Space Center up at Cape Canaveral, NASA. You know, they've got a fleet of 9 F-104 fighter jets. They've got 7 figures of revenue. You know, I think they've got a great management team. So we're going to essentially start there. We're looking at different opportunities. It's a really exciting time in the space industry, even with things that we've seen just recently with, you know, Intuitive Machines and Lunar, just getting the last mile delivery down into the lunar economy. So, I mean, there's so many different unique things that are happening. And for us, I would also mention, we've been looking at the space business for 3-4 years now, quite intensely. It's just, we never thought it was necessarily the right time to jump in. You know, a handful of years, Citigroup asked us to sponsor a SPAC, a space SPAC. We were kind of interested. We didn't pull the trigger at the time, probably kind of got lucky in a certain way. But what we've seen is in 2024, the valuations of most earlier stage space companies are at all-time lows or pretty close to all-time lows. So you have the valuations actually at a very low, depressed price, yet you're now seeing the technology being the furthest it's ever been. So that's an amazing setup for folks like us and new capital to really get involved in an industry like this.
When I hear you talk about SPACs, I mean, that was a moment in terms of when all these space SPACs came to market, sort of bringing this new space economy to light to public market investors. But to your point, we've seen many of those names sell off. We've seen some of them go away or at risk of delisting. I mean, can we say the SPAC phase of 2021, call it, was it good for investing in space, or was it bad for investing in space?
I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, like net probably to the investing public, it was certainly not good, because, you know, a lot of these companies went out at $4 or $5 billion with zero revenue. You know, in a certain environment, you know, one would argue that's an overvalued company. But in the whole trajectory of the space game or the space economy, I don't necessarily think it was a bad thing, because so much money went into the system. And just like any burgeoning brand new industry, you're going to have a lot of things not work out to make some things work out. And so in a certain capacity, I think it might have been a necessary evil in a certain way. It sucks, obviously. But I think in terms of the grand picture of things, having a lot of capital go in, some things kind of worked out, a lot of things didn't work out. I think we're ready to take that next phase over the next couple of years now, and we're starting to see that.
Are some of these publicly traded companies good investments? Are they? I realize you're probably more focused on the private market and maybe some of these smaller names or emerging names. But in terms of what is trading publicly, are there good investments out there?
Well, and that's just it, right? And so I've got a lot of friends who think I'm out of my mind, saying, what, you're investing in space? That's risky. Is it even investable? You know, some people think Star Trek, and I get a whole mixed bag of things. And so I actually think it's riskier not to be investing in space right now. So, I mean, and again, you don't have to be a very, you know, astute investor like myself or my firm Fortuna Investments. You know, from and again, I think a lot of the listening audience, Morgan, is, you know, CNBC is the biggest financial platform in the world. And so in terms of the public market, I think there's a handful of pretty, I guess, smart or good ways to play the industry, right? I mean, you've got a company like, let's say, GE, used to be a global conglomerate, great company, plays a dividend. And recently they've signaled to the market they're going to get out of all industries except for aerospace. And now what has the stock done over the last, you know, 6 months or so? It was 105, 110 bucks in October. It's almost 200 bucks now, paying a dividend. The stock charts literally from the bottom left to the top right. Very well-run company. So, you know, there's companies like that that are kind of, you know, that are existing companies that are not going to go anywhere, that give you some upside and give you some torque. I'd say, you know, maybe a basket approach. You know, Cathie Wood's got a great ETF, ARKX, for example. And not only do they have the space companies, but she's put a little bit of Google and Facebook and some of the tech companies in there with the argument that those companies are also using the space economy. And that's, you know, it's a good, nice hedged kind of basket. We, you know, I'm not saying put every dollar you have into these things, but in terms of exposure, you can uniquely place some of these things from a public market in a way like that. And then you've got that kind of next tier of extremely speculative type of companies that, like Lunar, LUNR, for example. I think it's about $150 million market cap. So it's very, very small market cap. I believe they've got almost $50 million in cash. They've obviously done some tremendous work in the last month or so. So it's hard not to cheer for folks like that where, you know, it's a really small company. They got a couple of things to work. Are they able to figure out their business model? It's a 10 or 100X from there potentially. And so from the public markets, Morgan, there's a handful of really, I think, unique ways to play this thing.
Got it. So talking about the private market piece of this then, and some of these companies that maybe are a little more speculative, you have a goal of investing in 12 early stage space startups over the next few years, right? First one, Starfighters. I guess walk me through why launch made the most sense in terms of an initial investment.
So I don't necessarily know if it does make the most sense, but we ended up there, and I'll give you the kind of background of the thesis. So I think generally speaking, it's probably not a good idea to be competing with Elon Musk in any industry per se. And I think his track record has demonstrated as such. He ends up taking a huge amount of market share and you know, I don't want to say sucking the air of the industry, but he's very good at what he does. And so the thing that was compelling about the Starfighters Aerospace, you know, opportunity when it was presented to us is it's not a fly-by-night operation. It's not, you know, two kids with backwards hats with like a grandiose idea that may or may not happen. You know, you go there, you tour the facility. They're at the John F. Kennedy Space Center. They're literally right, you know, in between SpaceX and Blue Origin. You know, tremendous real estate. But they've got an operating business. They've got seven figures of revenue. They've got nine F-104 fighter jets. And to give you contrast or perspective, I don't even know if my home country of Canada necessarily has 10 fighter jets in their entire fleet. So they've got meat, they've got some substance. They're seeking our, you know, $50 million investment for a launch license. And so the theory or the rationale is you've got a reusable stage one being the fighter jet. You've got a great location. You aren't competing with Elon because Elon is very, you know, the Elons, the Jeffs, they're very fixated on the heavy payload, the really, really big, heavy payload. And so with technology's actually condensed itself so much where a lot of these satellites that are going up are the size of, you know, a pizza box or, you know, an iPhone for that matter, you know, these CubeSats and NanoSats. And so if Starfighters is able to execute, they could have a great, you know, cadence and launch market for the smaller side of the market that has kind of been not necessarily tapped into.
Got it. What are some of the other areas that you're looking at in terms of the space economy and where things are headed?
I mean, honestly, Morgan, there's so much. I don't want to say it's overwhelming, but there's so many cool, like, I mean, this in the best way possible. There's so many cool things, and I don't mean just cool, like, wow, that's cool, but things that could be viable, right? And so I'm not doing this as necessarily a hobby or like a passion project. We, you know, we're business people, we're business folks. I think everybody listening to the show is business folks as well too, at CNBC. And so I think the idea about the commercialization of space is we really have to nail the revenue and then the profitability. Because if we're not getting to those points, this, as you pointed out earlier, this industry is never going to get to where it needs to go.
Mm. So what do you look for then, especially when you're talking about some of these, you know, early stage companies? What are some of the metrics you look for to decide whether something could be a compelling investment or not?
I mean, quite honestly, I mean, just because the industry is so early, what we really look for is revenue. If you have revenue and you're selling something in the space economy or doing something with revenue, you've perked our interest, because then it's not a, you know, fallacy or necessarily a science experiment in a certain way. You've actually commercialized something. Now, you haven't commercialized it to SpaceX's, you know, level, but you're out there, you're selling something, somebody out there is paying you for your good or service. And so that's extremely interesting to us. And we won't differentiate whether it's on the lunar side or, you know, as you said, the launch or satellites or anywhere in between. If you've got revenue, we're very happy to take a really good look at your company and potentially provide you with, you know, $20 to $50 million worth of capital to help grow your private business.
So when we talk about space, I mean, we're talking about long lead times in some cases. So I guess when you make an investment, how much time are you thinking about what it's going to take to realize those returns?
So, I mean, for us, I mean, we're kind of in the, let's say, 3 to 5 year camp, you know, ish, give or take. I think for us, anything longer than, you know, 5 years is challenging. It's not that it's not doable, but you have to have a lot of things hold firm for such a long period of time. And so I think anything less than 3, you're basically gambling in a certain way. You may as well go to the casino. 3 to 5 is a sweet spot because we you know, for whatever it's worth, we've got a view of the world. We've got different things that I think 3 to 5 is very reasonable. Heck, you know, we've been investments for you know, certain investments for over 10 years because that 3 to 5 year window hits, the company is performing, you know, we're shareholders, we're financial backers, and we continue to support that company. But to answer your question, we really kind of hone in on that kind of 5 year mark where we'd like to see some significant, you know, tangible financial progress.
Tailwinds for this industry, headwinds for this industry?
Ooh, tailwinds for this industry. So the tailwinds for this industry is we've come through you know, a 20-year market crash for small cap and small cap equities and anything really growth related. Obviously, space is a great growth related industry. So we've seen some nasty compression in the marketplace. Capital's dried up, as I'm sure you well know. And so it's not going to be easy over the next year or so. I think, unfortunately, some companies will go bust. But the good news is everything is cyclical and seasonal, right? And so we've, you know, come out of this environment where interest rates went through the roof. We've saw the worst crash since 2008. And so now we're actually starting to, we're on the mend, right? That was winter time. I think winter's slowly starting to thaw out now. We're coming into spring in a certain way. Spring's a great time because it's there's a lot of opportunities there. Things, you know, start to bloom or the prospect of them kind of blooming. And then inevitably, Morgan, we're gonna hit summer. Summer's gonna happen in the next couple of years. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be fantastic. Celebrate, get out in the sun. But then inevitably, as the cycles go, you're going to hit fall and you better harvest because we'll end up in that winter again. And so I just want to give, you know, the viewers and the listeners that perspective of we end up almost foolishly getting so fixated on maybe the day-to-day stuff. What's the stock price performing at? What's happening in the space industry? How did this launch go? How did this thing happen? How did that? And so sometimes we actually lose the forest for the trees. And so I'm saying if you take one huge step back, we're at a really, really good point now in the space industry.
That's exciting to hear. I feel like we talk about seasons with cryptocurrencies, like crypto winter, you know, and it's like now, okay, we're going to talk about space, spring and summer. I like it.
Well, and even crypto, we're not in crypto. I mean, we were in crypto a long time ago, but like even crypto, like, you know, that went through a nasty crash. Everybody thought it was going to zero. It was like 20,000. Everyone's like crying and it was like over. And now it's like $65,000-$70,000. It's hitting all time high. So even an industry like that, you see that cyclical kind of approach. And the key, Morgan, is just to, you know, one step or one foot in front of the other, head down, to stick with your thesis and kind of disregard some of those day-to-day kind of clutter stuff. Because if you're fixated on something over the long term, it'll really come true.
Yeah. I do want to ask about the SpaceX investment because you recently became a SpaceX investor. And I wonder why you thought that was compelling now and what drove that investment.
So we were offered our first round in 2015 or 16. We didn't know enough about it. We very foolishly declined. And we weren't in the space business. I didn't know the first thing about space at the time, but continue to follow the company's progress. More and more exciting things were happening. The valuation was climbing and climbing over the years. And then it actually, in a certain way, it became hard for me to maybe justified putting money in at a lot higher valuation than we kind of declined. I don't know if that's ego or hubris or I don't know, stupidity, whatever you call it. We didn't actually do it. And so then the company, we took a look at the company in a pragmatic, just a, you know, unfiltered lens. You've got a company that, as I was mentioning earlier, just in this last calendar year, they did $9 billion in revenue, profitable company, almost equally split between the Starlink business and the launch side. Even at $180 billion valuation where it sits today, I would argue that's a very cheap valuation given the industry that they're in. And so it's, as I was mentioning to you before when we were chatting last, Morgan, it was, you only find companies like this, you know, literally once in a decade, maybe once in a generation. You go back to the biggest companies in America, most of which are all technology companies. You know, you've got Amazon, you've got Google, Microsoft, Meta. So those companies were able to do something very, very unique. They did something that nobody else was able to do. They put a moat around their business, and they became cash cows. And they are the equivalent of the Ford and the GMs and the great iconic American companies of the earlier days. So fast forward to SpaceX. I actually think SpaceX is, you know, maybe NVIDIA's in that category now, but SpaceX is unequivocally in that category of these new trillion-dollar companies that are going to be right here in America in market. Hmm.
Starlink, how compelling is that to the valuation? Are you even thinking about something like Starship?
I think you have to look at Starship. I mean, I don't think, sorry, in the $180 billion valuation, I wouldn't give, there's not a dollar, attributed dollar value to Starship. It's just going to be such a game changer, man. It's unbelievable what they're doing over there. I've had the great pleasure of being at the Hawthorne facility a number of times in California. I know them well. Morgan, it's harder to become an employee at SpaceX than it is to get into Harvard, for example. It's unbelievable what these guys are doing over there. Just the energy, not just the energy, but the progress they're able to make. And so this Starship, I mean, they're going to drop the cost of you know, a kilogram of payload. You know, we think anywhere from $300 to $500. You know, it's around the $3,000 mark now. So we think a 90% reduction. Obviously, just the sheer magnitude of stuff that they're going to be able to start taking up there. I mean, this is going to be Elon's, you know, his Mars rocket. Future's bright, Morgan. Future's really, really bright.
So if I bring this full circle here with this last question for you, as somebody who does understand the SpaceX portfolio as well as you do and recently invested, what does that mean in terms of how does that affect your color, if at all, the way you're thinking about how you're going to invest in other startups as well, knowing that the space economy is continuing to evolve, continuing to grow, and will potentially change as SpaceX evolves and grows?
Absolutely. And I think it's a good school of thought to, I mean, Elon's essentially the railroad tracks, right? And so the idea is not to build a new railroad. The idea is to find things that'll plug into his railroad in a certain way. I think that'll be a very valuable thesis for earlier stage companies. I think in any industry, you need that top kind of trickle down approach. Again, our business is not backing $180 billion companies. I mean, that said, if Jeff Bezos would take my money, I'd gladly give it to him, but he's closed for investment. But in terms of the earlier stuff, as I said, there's going to be a real trickle down effect. And I think there's going to be a lot of winners. It's not going to happen overnight in a way that you and I probably want it to happen. But I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to see some really, really outstanding stuff. And that's why we're so excited.
All right. Justice Parmar of Fortuna Investments, thanks for joining me. Great to speak with you.
Pleasure. Thanks, Morgan.
That does it for this episode of Manifest Space. Make sure you never miss a launch by following us wherever you get your podcasts and by watching our coverage on Closing Bell Overtime. I'm Morgan Brennan.